So with that, I give you Sid.
I'm Sid. I'm an alcoholic. She didn't tell you what, when she really got to know me, there's a group of us that go out to eat sometimes on Wednesday nights, and she's heard some things there that I think she's just been kind of surprised about. But, I mean, it's, we let it all hang out. I was told that when I stand up to tell my story that I qualify, and I qualify by giving my sobriety date, my home group, and the fact that I have a sponsor. I do have a sponsor. My home group is the Toco Group, and my sobriety date is June 29th, 1980. And any of you who are going to tell your story, what we tend to do is reflect on all that. And I was thinking about what it was like back when I was drinking, and I just got really tired thinking about all that. I just couldn't live that way anymore because my life was pretty dramatic back then. And I grew up in Florida, and I had a brother who's a little over a year younger than I am. We grew up in a household where there was a lot of drinking. We witnessed violence between my parents. And that had a major effect on me. I think that I was probably dealing with depression early on, but I didn't know it. And I don't even know when I had my first drink, because I was young when I had my first drink. My father, I would sometimes take a sip of his beer, or when my parents were having parties, I would collect all the leftovers that were in the glasses, and then I would give it out to the other kids. So I was kind of controlling the alcohol flow then. But I don't remember ever having enough to really get drunk. I think the first time that I really felt the effects of a substance is I was probably about 10 or 11 years old, and I had a really bad cough, and I had some of this turpentine hydrate cough medicine, which back then was prescribed. And I was coughing really bad, and I just kept taking hits off of it to try to help the cough. And I just felt really funny and loose, and I was having a great time, and everybody was laughing. And I liked that. I liked that people were laughing and that I was funny and I was getting this attention. And I look back now and I realize that was the first time that I really felt the effects of another substance. But I actually got drunk for the first time when I was 16. And I was involved in community theater. And I was one of the youngest in the group. And after we would have our first show, there's always a party the first night. And I remember coming out of the room, and there was a huge whiskey bottle on this table. It was about this high, and it had a pump on it. And I was very impressed. And got drunk that night, of course, and proceeded to drink a lot with this group of people. But they always looked out after me. My parents were, I mean, I was pretty much allowed to do whatever I wanted to do. I didn't take advantage of that. I can't believe that, I mean, I was allowed to go party with these adults and go drink with them. Now, I didn't tell my family that I was drinking, but I would call maybe at 12 o'clock at night and say, well, I'm going over here, going over there, and they'd say, fine. And I never really got in any major trouble. I was pretty trustworthy, although I was drinking. And that's how I proceeded to go through high school. I was very unhappy at home. I was, as I said earlier, I was experiencing depression. And after I got out of high school, I had my first geographic. And at the time, didn't realize that that's what it was. And my father was demanding that I go to college, and so I did the opposite. I got married and went off to Montana from Florida. And I was out there for a few years and didn't drink for a while. And then when I picked it up again, I had problems because Still, I don't know if I had really crossed the line. I mean, I could do without it, but every time I drank, I got into trouble. And it's like no matter where I was, I never fit in. Every time I tried to be with a group of people, I just never fit in. I felt like an alien. I used to tell people when I was growing up that I was adopted because I just didn't believe I could be in this family. And I would tell my teachers that I was adopted and that we had 9 kids. I mean, I made up all kinds of stories just to make my life more interesting. Anyway, in that marriage, I had a son. And through my drinking, I lost my child and went back to Florida and dried up a little bit and decided to buckle down and get serious. And I was very ambitious and I landed a good job. And I had a dream job for an alcoholic. I had an expense account. Everybody I worked with drank and we traveled. And I just had a wonderful time for the next 5 years. But what was happening is, it was starting to get worse. The drinking was getting worse. The escapades were getting worse. I was in one relationship after another. I mean, just numerous relationships. I appeared to be very independent, but really I was not at all because I always had to have somebody in my life. And I did not see that until I got sober. My life continued to just spiral out of control. I was in my 20s and it was just getting worse and worse, the drinking. The relationships were getting crazier and crazier. I would tell you that I had never lost a job, but that's because I would leave before anything happened. And finally, at the end of my 20s, my mom was saying things to me like, "Do you think you might be an alcoholic? Do you think you could have a problem?" And I started to look into that. And I looked into it because it was getting so bad that I would put piles of chairs up in front of my door. The paranoia was setting in, and I think I was starting to see things like giant roaches and things like that. You know how you turn around and you see something out of the corner of your eye. Anyway, in 1978, I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting after 2 12-step calls. And, you know, I didn't think it'd be too difficult. You know, I wouldn't have a problem with this. And I tried to stop drinking, and it was pretty difficult. I had never tried to stop drinking before. So I barricaded myself in my apartment for a week, and as soon as I stepped foot outside the door, I got drunk. And so I decided, you know, I need to go to more of these meetings. People gave me the talk when I first came into AA. You know, they were telling me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. You know, don't get into a relationship. And I was in the program 2 weeks, and I met somebody. And it was Boy Meets Girl on AA campus. You know, you've read about it in the 12-step. Every time I read that, I have to laugh because I so identify. But 7 months later, I was married. And the man that I married had just gotten out of the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary, and he had served 3 years for interstate gambling. And I do talk about him in my story because he had a big part in helping me to reach bottom and play a big part in my story. And I thought we were going to do this AA thing together, but I had no clue what I was stepping into. My husband learned a lot when he was in prison and proceeded to put that knowledge to use in criminal enterprise, let me put it that way. There were a lot of things that happened in the next few years. I can say that there was I don't know how to really put this, huge check kiting operations, which are basically like bank robbery before the computer systems were online, that was taking place. And he used to have these groups of people working for him in these different states, and this is how I lived my life. I had that going on at home, and then I would go to AA meetings. And it was kind of hard to stay sober with all that going on. I also had my first exposure to substances other than alcohol, which I had never used before. I was primarily a drinker. And so this is what happened. This is what my life was for like the next year and a half. In and out of the program, couldn't stay sober. I'm not going to go into all the detail of the things that happened. Our living was made illegally. And so I couldn't really be honest with a sponsor about what was happening at home. I kept trying to work the steps and doing, you know, skipping over 1, 2, and 3 and writing a 4-step. And that's kind of difficult if you haven't done the first three steps. I don't know if anybody's ever tried that. It doesn't work real well. So I kept ending up drunk because I couldn't get honest about anything. And finally, I was in a found myself in a Salvation Army in Orlando, Florida, and got out of there and realized that I couldn't drink anymore. But I was around all these other substances and decided to try that because I'd never had any problems with drugs, but I had with alcohol. But what I didn't realize is one was going to lead me back to the other, which is exactly what happened. And I began to romance suicide because I was just getting more and more depressed at my life and what was happening with my life. And after the next 4 or 5 months, things were getting worse and worse. And I found myself one afternoon, I didn't know if it was 5 a.m. or 5 p.m. I'd been doing drugs for probably 5 days at that point. And I took 120 Valium and came to in the hospital in ICU. And I knew that this was it. I mean, if I couldn't make it in AA, that I just wasn't going to make it anywhere. And I got out of ICU and I went to AA, and I threw myself into the program, and I got a sponsor for the first time that I used. And my husband did not get sober with me at that time. And I don't know if any of you have ever tried to get sober that way. What I did was a pretty dangerous situation, but I knew that my time was up. I knew that it was time to get sober. I knew it deep in my gut that it was all over with. And I threw myself into AA meetings. And once again, I had this situation at home where all this illegal activity was going on, and I'm going to AA meetings. This continued for a few months, and my sponsor confronted me at one point. She kind of knew what was going on. And she said, you know, if you don't get honest, you're going to get drunk again. And I had to take the risk of getting honest with somebody and telling them what was going on in my life. And I could no longer at that point participate in what was happening in the illegal activity because I couldn't stay sober doing that. I had to just step out of that. And my husband and I, of course, started growing apart, but I felt very angry with God that God did not fix him. Because finally, after all these relationships that I had, I was trying to make something work. Now, regardless that I had made a commitment to somebody who was an active alcoholic and drug addict, you know, that's how I'd made my commitment, and I was trying to make this work. And, you know, the chances were pretty slim. When I had about 9 months of sobriety, I was out running some errands with my husband that day, and I turned around. We were at my bank, and there were police surrounding the car, and he was in handcuffs, and they took me out of the car, and they started questioning me. And I remember the first thought that went through my head was, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, like AA did this to me, right? I was taken back to my house. My home was searched. And that Friday night was the night of my home group. supposed to go to my home group meeting that night, and I didn't get there. And my husband proceeded to get bonded out and went on the lam and left the state. And I ended up moving in with some friends in the program. And I had been living such a crazy life for the last year and a half that I didn't know, you know, I was with these people that I remember being really surprised that they ate breakfast in the morning and then they would eat dinner at a regular time, that they did some of the same things every day and they had kind of a normal routine because I'd been out of that for so long. I just had all this drama going on in my life. And so I started living this ordinary life, and this was really novel for me. I really kind of liked it. And I would just go to meetings, spend a lot of time in meetings, and spend a lot of time with these friends of mine. And what was really kind of strange is that all this activity, everything that had happened, was all over the newspapers. And when I tried to go get a job, I couldn't get a job in the field that I'd been working in. Nobody would hire me. And so I was told by my sponsor, just, you know, get a simple job. All you need to do is to just have something simple right now, to just focus on my sobriety. So the job I ended up getting was I went to work at a pet cemetery. And I was real embarrassed to tell anybody I was working for a pet cemetery because I had a big ego. I'd been working in public relations, you know. And, of course, nobody would hire me. And I'm working in this pet cemetery, and all the people that were around me were people in the program. And this was just, it was just really good for me during that time. It was a good place to work. I was making very little money. But you know what was really interesting is that I never went without. I was able to start cleaning up my debts on this little paltry amount of money that I brought home. I was able to eat. I had a roof over my head. Things were not the way they had been. I didn't have all this stuff that I'd had around me. I wasn't living on all this drug money anymore. But I didn't have all this fear going on either in my life. And I began to work the steps for the first time. Really worked the steps. And I experienced, at about a year and a half, I went through what I like to call another bottom. It was more like an emotional bottom. And it was a very hard bottom. It was not like the one that we get when we first come in this program, the physical bottom that we go through. And I've heard a lot of people talk about this. This was really a very deep emotional, very, very difficult time. And it was a time where I had to put just one foot in front of the other. And I remember being told to just make a list. And I don't know if you've ever gone through these times where you've gone through something so difficult, it's like you're back at step one. And all I could do was make a list of the things that I needed to do each day in front of me, trying to clean up my life. And I didn't know if I was going to be arrested for some of the things I'd been involved with. I didn't know what was going to happen. But for the first time, I was trying to find a God of my understanding. And I was praying like you people taught me to pray. I was reading the third step prayer out of the big book. I didn't know how to pray. But I started taking these steps and taking these actions. And it was amazing to me. I had something that had happened, and I thought I was going to be arrested for lying under oath. And I called this attorney, and I told him, I didn't even say a lot. I said, you know, I just can't do this. I need to call you, and I need to tell you that this case needs to be dropped. And all he said was, I understand. And that was the last I heard of it. Things started to just fall away from me. All the issues that had been around my husband and the law coming to talk to us. And I remember we found out one day, the people that I was living with, that our phones had been tapped. And I remember first I was tightening up about it, but then I thought, well, you know, I'm really not talking about anything. There's nothing going on. The phones are tapped, but I'm leading an ordinary life right now. I remember when the police questioned me at one point, they told me, you know, I really thought that when they said that they'd been following me, I thought, oh, you know, that's BS. That's not really true. But they told me where they had been following me to, and it was they'd sat outside of a lot of AA meetings. And I thought, oh my God, I mean, this is for real. Because if they had been following me a year before, I would have been arrested. And I had this really good friend tell me, and I was thinking about this yesterday, and he said, you know, I ran into somebody recently who was arrested as an accessory for being involved in some of the same things you were, and she's been sentenced to 3 years in prison. And I remember this cold feeling inside, and I realized, you know, I couldn't have lived through something like that where I was at, and that I felt like I was experiencing the grace of God, and that I had a protection around me, and that finally I was on the right path. The thing that did scare me, though, is I was afraid that I was going to get bored with this ordinary life I was leading. I thought, what if I can't handle this just ordinary getting up and going to work and all this? What if I can't do this? What if I do something to screw it up? What if? And I just kept trying to put one foot in front of the other and to try to stay in today. And you know, when you're new and you're trying to learn all these different things, it's pretty difficult. It was very critical for me to stay in close touch with my sponsor. I probably, in those first few years, I probably went to 2-3 meetings a day. I stayed out of relationships because I had finally reached a bottom where that was concerned. We get what we need to help us to reach our bottom, and I needed something pretty dramatic to take me down, and I didn't want to be in any relationships. When I was getting close to 3 years of sobriety, I decided that I wanted to, you know, it really wasn't like that. It wasn't that I wanted to move. I remember waking up one morning and I had this feeling that I was going to be leaving. And I told my roommate, I said, you know, I have this feeling I'm going to be moving. And I said, I don't know where I'm moving, but I know I'm not staying here. And I had the option of going to several different places, but I remember I came to Atlanta for a conference and I came to AA meetings. In fact, I came to this very clubhouse, and I met some of the people, and there was a women's meeting here on Thursday night at the time, and I went to the women's meeting back behind those curtains, and everything just felt right. It just felt right. And I went home, and within 30 days, I turned in my notice, and I was back up here in Atlanta. And I came up here with no job, no place to live. And I got here and pulled into town on a Friday afternoon, and I was just scared to death. And I thought, I've got to be out of my mind. I'll just stay for the weekend and go back home. I had a friend here who had been in my home group, and I was going to stay with he and his wife. So I came here to NAB. I went I think it was a 5:45 meeting, and I just talked about where I was at. And everybody was just great. I got phone numbers. Everybody came up and talked to me. And so I decided to give it a little bit of time. And within 2 weeks, I had a job. Within about 24 hours, I knew where I was going to be living. Again, when we're on the right path, everything falls into place. And I had this new life. It just felt like this very new life. And I was in a place where I didn't have all that trauma that had happened in Florida. I was just, it was new, and I was excited, and I was happy to be sober, and I had all these new friends, and life was just great. I kind of left Florida without my ex-husband knowing where I was at, and didn't want him to know that I was here in Atlanta, because I still had some fear about all that. And the past did follow me, and the past did catch up with me. There was something that happened with my ex-husband's son where he, under the influence of drugs, murdered a woman. And they contacted me and they wanted me to come down and testify on his behalf. And I was just terrified. I didn't want to get sucked into all that again. And I didn't know what to do, and I talked to some people up here, and I just did what they told me to do, and I stayed right here. I didn't do anything. And I kept wondering if I was ever going to get away from all that. And it took me probably a good 5 years to recover from everything that had happened, to recover financially. And you know, it's probably good that it took so long for me to recover financially, because before, I had just taken money for granted. I had just taken stuff for granted. And it took me 4 years of sobriety to get into my own apartment again, to live by myself. And it was just a small place, just a little one-bedroom place. And I was so grateful. I was finally in my life, I was grateful just for the necessities. I didn't need a lot of stuff. And I was grateful to have this calm life. I was grateful to have my sobriety. And I had a lot of work to do on myself. I mean, for me to allow myself to go so far down, to get into such a screwed up living situation, I needed to do a lot of work on myself. And I was really afraid to get into any kind of relationship again. And I didn't date for a long time. And then when I did date, I just never would date anybody for very long. And it seemed like my limit, I think this was primarily though in drinking, my limit was 3 years for a relationship. The only way I made it 4 years is one of them I was separated for that last year. We seem to have like a shelf life for relationships, a lot of alcoholics. But I finally got to a point, and this was after I had a lot of sobriety, that I started dating some. And I had never really done the thing as a teenager of dating different people. And I went through and I had that experience and went through and got my heart broken sober and didn't get drunk. And working the steps on relationships, you know, that's really, anybody that's experiencing that, I mean, that's very, very different, where I had to take the other person into consideration with what I was doing, and to make sure that I wasn't using anyone and not being selfish. And I met a man named Noble. Talked last week about how I met him when he had 2 months of sobriety, and that is the truth. He was over at my apartment, and Charlotte Ann, who some of you know, was there, and I had sold this chair to somebody. And they were coming over to pick it up, and Noble introduced himself to me, and I asked Charlotte Ann about him, and she said he has 2 months, and I thought, yeah, no way. And I mean, who wants to raise a newcomer, right? So I ended up running into him again about 6 years later at one of the roundups, and we started going out some. And he talked about also this last week, this is going to be my rebuttal on that situation. He talked about how something had happened between us, and I told him, I said, don't ever, ever call me back. And I did say that. So don't ever call me. Don't contact me. Well, what he did is, I got home one night, and there was this pile of gifts on my doorstep with a gargoyle on top with a bunch of flowers in an envelope with a letter of amends inside of it. So I read the letter and I called him, and he cleaned things up and everything was fine. And we started going out, I guess a couple of months later. And it was a slow process. A year later we got engaged, and then we lived together, and then we got married. And that has been an adjustment. Both he and I talked about it. Neither one of us had ever had relationships that lasted very long. And making a commitment is very different when you experience that in sobriety. It's much more serious. And I was glad for finally getting to that place. But I used to hear people say, people who were in marriages or relationships say, you know, get into a relationship and you get to work your character defects. You get to see all your character defects come up. And you know, that is the truth. I had been on my own for so long, and I was just, it's hard to adjust to someone else. And we both went through that, and a year later we were laughing at some of the things. It's like, what was the big deal about that issue a year later, that territorial issue that was going on? But we've been married now for 9 years, and we have our ups and downs. We're both in the program, and I thank this program for our relationship, because what works is that if we have any problems or if we have a disagreement or a fight about something, we have sponsors, we have steps. And we both step back and we take a look at ourselves. And I think that's critical. I think that's critical for alcoholics. I cannot imagine myself being with somebody, if they were in the program, not working the steps and not being involved in going to meetings. One thing that I haven't mentioned that's been really important to me in the program, and I learned this early on, or I was told that I needed to get involved with women and get to know women in sobriety if I was going to get to know myself. And I started to do that very reluctantly. But I started to do that, and I was really afraid of women. And I was afraid that they could see through me, that they could see who I really was, that they could see that I was a phony. And then when I got involved with women and I started going to women's meetings, it was just incredible. I had totally missed this thing of having girlfriends in my teenage years. And I started to experience that in sobriety. And it was just incredible. I went on my first trip to Europe with a group of women in the program, with four women, and we didn't have one disagreement. We had the most wonderful time. I have friends in my life that I've known for 20 years plus. I never had anybody in my life that long. We've gone through ups and downs and just gotten closer from it. I love my female friends. It is such a good feeling to be able to be really who you are, to be able to say what you think, as twisted as it might be coming out, you know? I could just say however it is, it comes out of my mouth, and I know that the person hearing it is either going to laugh about it or they're going to understand and identify. And that's just why I value these women so much. Sponsoring other women has been an incredible gift. Whatever I have gone through, whatever I have been experiencing in the program, I don't ever have to go through it alone. There's either somebody around me going through it at the same time or someone who has been through it. And you people told me that when I came in here. But I had to experience it for myself. I had to experience what the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous was really about. Because I used to think fellowship had to do with church. And that was a turnoff for me. But if you're not really involved in the program and you're not involved in the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're really missing something. Because there are just friends here that you're waiting to meet. Service work. I've been involved in all aspects of service work. I've been on the Atlanta Roundup Committee, been involved in women's retreats, and I love all that. It's really a lot of fun. A few years ago, I decided, you know, it was time to turn some of that over to some of the other people and to just focus on sponsoring other women. And that's what I've done in the last few years. I want to talk about something that happened in my life about 3 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago. I had something happen, I think, when I was a child. I fell, or I don't know, just an accident. But I had things happen where I would experience bouts of pain throughout my drinking years. And when I would drink, I'd just have another drink and I'd get through it and it would be no big deal. Well, about 9 years ago, I woke up one morning and I could hardly walk. And I finally had to seek medical attention. And I was dealing with a herniated disc. And 3 years ago, or 4 years ago, I had my first surgery. I ended up having two surgeries, which were, I guess, basically, they were failures. They didn't help at all. And I was dealing with chronic pain, and I was dealing with the issue of medication, and I was fighting the medication, and it was just incredible pain. And God put somebody in my life. God put a lady in my life who was experiencing the same thing. And we talked to each other, and we would share with each other. And I think we both saved each other because we both knew what the other one was going through. I found out a year ago that I'm going to be dealing with this the rest of my life, that this is just the way it is. But what has happened is, I don't know if it's because I surrendered or I don't know. It has gotten better to a great extent, but I still have pain, a lot of pain some days that I have to deal with. But what I do is I look around and I see that there's a lot of people around that are worse off than I am. I have never had to give up going to work. I have had to adjust my life a little bit, but you know, that is not that big a deal. Sometimes I have gone through feeling sorry for myself over it, but and there are times like I just went through a few days over the weekend where it was just really kind of difficult. I was still able to go do things. It didn't drive me into the bed. I had to get off my feet a little bit. And I'm very grateful for that. So if anybody is going through anything physical or something along those lines, please reach out and talk to someone, because I didn't do that for a while. I tried to tough it out and I tried to act like nothing was wrong. I didn't talk about it in my home group. And I still don't think I've talked about it enough, because it really took me into a hole. And I withdrew a lot, and I'm trying to pull myself out of that in the last year. I've been trying to pull myself out and to get active again and to be somewhat in a place where I was. But, I mean, it really shook me. And I can see that I possibly, with the way my thinking was going and the way I was feeling, I could have drifted away from meetings. And I've seen that happen to people. And I'm really grateful that I didn't, but that's where my mind was going because of the withdrawal that was taking place. So I am really grateful that I'm here today. I'm grateful that I have not taken a drink during this time, and that I'm still a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm really glad this talk's over with. I'd like to thank you very much.